We talked about why people would want to do a project like this. Because it's something that may take years. It may take travel to foreign countries. It may take, it may take money.
It's a good excuse to go to a foreign country.
So why would somebody want to do that? Now, is there one other person coming?
Yeah, she is.
Okay, okay. Okay, well, you're all new, and my name is Margie. And I'm teaching how to write your family history. The reason I'm teaching is because I wrote mine about 3 years ago, and it took me about 7 years to get it all from starting research to getting the finished copy. And as you can see, it looks large. It's not really that large. It's just Xeroxed, and but anyway, it's written. And I feel that's the main hurdle to get over with. Yesterday we talked about why somebody would undertake a project like this. First of all, probably have some interest in it, but there have been a lot of people who have actually published their family histories or autobiographies. And so there's a lot of interest in it, and if you can write it up and it's unique and it's interesting, you know, there's a lot of even bestsellers that have been on this subject. And I brought this one in. This is a new one. It's about Oregon, Eastern Oregon, a man named William Kitteridge. I know there's people here from Oregon. And he wrote about his growing up there, and it turns out he's kind of a pioneer.
What's the name of that one?
And it's called Hole in the Sky, a Memoir.
Is that for sale
here? I don't think
I
so.
I have his other book.
You do?
Is that H-O-L-E or W-H-O-L-E?
It's, yeah, H-O-L-E.
He's a marvelous writer.
He is a wonderful writer. And
that was Kitteridge?
Kitteridge.
His name is Kitteridge, and actually I have a bibliography I'm going to pass out.
Oh, okay. Is it on there?
Yeah,
yeah, okay.
It's on there. And then here's another one I just picked up just a couple weeks ago at the University of Washington bookstore, and it's called Mama Makes Up Her Mind, and it is just wonderful stories. It is just wonderful, understandable stories, not complicated, very simple, and it's a Southern woman that's doing the writing. So these are just two that are out on the market right now, and there have been many in the past that have been just wonderful, and I have a bibliography. So other than that, why would people want to do their family story? And I just happened to notice this is our theme for the week. It's listening to the sacred here at Holden Village. And the first sentence says here, everyone longs to tell his or her story to someone and have it understood and accepted. And yesterday we had a man of Norwegian ancestry, and we had a Native American, and they promised they would write something and come back today, and so maybe later on we'll hear from them. But this is sort of the theme of the week, and I think it just, you know, it's right there. So before we get started, I just wanted to find out where you're from and what your ancestral background is, so I just have an idea about that. And also, if you want to say if you've been working on your genealogy or your family history and what point you're at. So, how we start here.
Well, I'm from Seattle. Actually, my mother wrote a little prose kind of history of her life, and a little bit also my dad's life, and so I have, you know, a start. I don't really know from that, you know, they came from Missouri, and I don't know too far back. Mm-hmm. What I'm interested in is doing something for my my own self, of course, but for my kids, and I would like to do some kind of video. Mm-hmm. Do a video.
Okay.
With pictures and
talking or
talk, yeah.
A script, yeah. Yeah. Well, there's
maybe writing too.
Some writing, yeah, involved in that too.
Yeah.
Well, good. Okay, Wendell?
Well, what is my background? Italian, French, English, Scotch-Irish, and Dutch. And I've been doing research for a number of years. I have a lot of material. I belong to the Sons of the American Revolution, which means I have a revolutionary ancestor. I also belong to the Society of the Descendants of Washington's Army at Valley Forge. So I have a Valley Forge ancestor. And I belong to a family association called the Edward Howell Association. All the descendants of Edward Howell came to this country in 1639, 20 years after the Mayflower. It didn't come on the Mayflower. And I have, my wife does more genealogy than I do. She puts more time and effort into it. And she has volume after volume of different, mostly of her ancestors, but she's worked with some of mine too. So we have about 20 volumes, I think, of different lines. Wow. And I'm sort of interested in doing history. And some of my ancestors, especially the oddballs and the eccentric ones, and the skeletons in the closet, be more interesting. Mm-hmm. Some of them, like my great-great-great-grandmother ran a tavern in Pennsylvania, Cross Keys Tavern in Danville, Pennsylvania, on the Susquehanna River, where a juncture of the Susquehanna, where it caught the people coming up on the barges and the people coming overland in the covered wagons, and they all went there. It's the most popular place in town.
Sounds like a good opening line for a chapter.
Yeah, she's one of the people I'd like to write about. And I'm trying to do some research on the ancestor of Edward Howell about eight generations before him. Who was supposed to have been a wealthy wealthy wool merchant in England, the name of Geoffrey Dormer, and I was trying to get some information on him at the Mormon Library in Salt Lake City, but was not successful. And I'm trying to get some information from the Howell Association, and I want documentation. I have the dates of this man and the fact that he was a wealthy wool merchant who was married twice and had 19 children or 20 children or whatever. But I want the documentation. I'm working on that right now. So I'm just interested in the whole field and writing some kind of a family history.
Okay, great.
Okay. Well, we are sisters. Our reasons for being here are really kind of different. We have the same ancestry. But kind of look at it. If I have my husband's name was a Baird, from whom the first television things were invented. Anyhow, and that the Baird family has been traced back a long, long way, and part of our family has been too. But my first elder hostel was one in tracing your genealogy, which got kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But there's our father's family we don't know anything about, and we keep saying someday we're going to look around. Mary likes to write more than I do, and so she's looking at it more than I think about it. We have one book that's written about some of our ancestors that is probably one of the most boring things I've ever read in my life. And when I read it, I think, oh, gosh, I could do better than that. So someday I'm going to rewrite around the Jennings Yeager campfire. That's so boring. But we're Scotch-Irish on our father's side and German and English on our mother's side. And some real interesting stories on the German-English side.
And where do you live now?
I live in Hawaii.
Oh.
And she lives in... I'm trying to remember where you live.
I can tell. Okay.
I live just about 3 hours south of here, in Chinook Pass, 40 miles up in the mountains from Yakima. But my major concern is not so much a family concern, but I am. I love to sit down at my computer and just let my mind wander. Which I can do very easily, and so I am more interested in character development. I've written over 100 pages already on a novel that takes place in post-Civil War times. I've got a number of characters that I keep weaving into the story and highlighting some of them, and so character development is critical, of course, in a novel.
Yeah.
This is not
genealogy in any way, although it has its background in an area where our mother was born and raised down in South Central Indiana. And so I know that area quite well. So although it is a novel, it is a somewhat a documentary historical setting.
Sounds like historical fiction.
Yeah. Right. So I just let my mind just go zoom, and with the computer it's so easy, if you don't like it, well, you just back up. And
that's a good point, though. That's the way to write, is just to let your mind go.
Well, when I first started doing it, it's just a typewriter, of course, because I've been doing this for a number of years, and it hasn't been until just this past a year ago, which is a little better than a year now, that I've had a computer of my own. It's just great. You can do all kinds of things with the computer. And I've first part of my book is, I just finished part one, and part two is 5 years later, as the characters have developed within those 5 years. And I'm just starting on part two.
Okay.
I really don't have too much trouble in just letting my computer wander by way of me. My major concern is publication. I've written a number of children's stories, and I still think that it's knowing somebody that knows somebody.
Yeah, this is true.
And I haven't found that somebody that knows somebody yet. Mm-hmm. Because my children's stories I have sent in, and I get them back within 6 weeks types of things. Mm-hmm. Thanks, but no thanks. And that's pretty discouraging.
Yeah, well, keep writing. And you, Joyce?
I wanted to ask you what kind of computer you have. I'm in the process of wanting to buy one.
Well, I don't know if it matters the type of computer you have. I think it's a matter of the program that you get into your computer. I got the professional write program that a friend of mine put into my computer, and I like it better than DOS, which is what you commonly get. Mm-hmm. Now, your new modern ones have Windows and Prodigy and all that kind of stuff, mine doesn't have the capability of taking those. You can get any kind of it's just like you buy any kind of a car, it'll get you there. Buy any kind of a computer, but what you get, what your extras are, is what you really want.
Yeah. What is different about yours? I mean, you say it's a professional writer's...
The program that I have that I like very much is called Professional Write. It's easier to use.
It's a word processor.
Yeah. It's the word processing part of the computer. The computer has data processing. It's not word processing, called data processing. What's the next one that you use figures on?
This is particularly geared to people who want to write.
No. Could we continue around the room and find out where people are from first? Okay, Joyce?
I'm from Eugene, Oregon currently, and I've taught creative writing. I have a master's in creative writing and poetry, and I'm retired now and teaching research paper writing part-time. So I've had some background in writing. However, I find writing, difficult to get around to when you have been putting it off for years. So, if you get in these places where you just don't want to write.
Mm-hmm.
My mother died last Thanksgiving Day, and she left 20 grandchildren and 38 great-grandchildren. And so my motivation is to write that family story of her and her mother, mm-hmm. and incidentally pull in the fathers a little bit too. Mm-hmm. People have done research on our family, and my grandfather's mother was Eleanor Montgomery. She descended from Alexander Montgomery, who won the Battle of Hastings, 1066, so that goes back a ways.
Yeah.
Anyway, for the Alexander Montgomery line, it's kind of weak. So I want to include some information like that, although there's no way I can follow up, that. Particularly my main interest is to tell my grandmother's story and my mother's story, because the times have changed so tremendously since they were born. It's really amazing. My mother, born in 1905, my grandmother and grandfather started working on the Hart Parr farm at that time in northern Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And that was developing the tractor. And I kept giving them journals so they would write down some stories, but the only thing she wrote about was that, that initial time about the Hard Park Farm, when she had, you know, 20 to 30 men to feed every day. Mm-hmm. She was running the kitchen, and my grandfather was running the farm, and they had all these men to tile the farm, but they would test out tractors, sometimes four-wheel tractors, mm-hmm. which would have to be pulled out of the mud with the horse team, and this mm-hmm. kind of interesting. Anyway, the little tidbits like that.
Okay, great. Beverly?
I apologize for being so late. I couldn't find the right group. Mm-hmm. What are you asking?
We're asking what your family ancestry is, okay. a certain ethnic group, and then also where you're from now.
I'm from Billings, Montana, and I'm from a Norwegian and Czechoslovakian background. Mm-hmm. My husband's genealogy has been written for 5 or 7 generations, but I haven't. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to get into it, and I haven't started, okay. so I'm interested in anything.
Good.
I have to talk about.
And Victor, what is your background?
Can you read that for it?
Okay. Yep.
My background? Family history. Almost all Norwegian.
Uh-huh.
What? I figure about 1/5 Finnish. And then the Swede got across the border. So I was 1/64 Finnish. I'm from Montevideo, Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
I was supposed to tell where our childhood was, something like that.
Yeah.
North Dakota. Mm-hmm. A little town went down in North Dakota, the eastern part.
Mm-hmm. And where do you live now?
Montevideo, Minnesota.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not quite sure where that is.
Well, you know where Minneapolis is, start from there and go straight west 125 miles.
Oh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
7.
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. I know where it is now. Yeah. Well, great. Well, we got a pretty diverse group here, and for those of you that arrived late yesterday, we just went into why somebody would want to get into this, and obviously all of you have a strong interest in it, so let's just plunge into the heart of the matter, it seems to me, in writing something like this, is how to make it interesting, because if you're going to hand it down to grandchildren or children. You don't want it to just sit there and lie on the shelf and gather dust, and you want them to really it become part of their lives. And furthermore, and as I was saying before, is that some of these things get published. And I have two examples here. It's one, Mama Makes Up Her Mind, and this Oregonian wrote The Hole in the Sky, that are currently right out on the shelves. I don't know if they're bestsellers yet, but they might be. And so you can always think publishing, and I know it's real tough, but you don't have to think of that as your first goal. I think your first goal should be just to get something down that's interesting, and whatever stage you're at, you may not want to finish it, you could just leave it, but as long as you get something down. Now, the first problem is getting it down. That is what I find. Hi.
Hi.
The first problem is getting it down. So many of us are wonderful talkers, but when it comes to writing, it's hard. And you were mentioning it's hard to get into the discipline of writing. But I think, your name again?
Mary.
Mary mentioned something that just really made me think is the way to go about it. Just whatever comes out, that's the way to get started. And there's been a lot of workshops dealing with that on writing. And if you think about, uh-oh, this is wrong, you know, this doesn't sound quite right, and boy, I certainly don't sound like a real intellectual here, that will stymie you. You'll get blocked. Writer's block. It's very, very common, believe me. And so the first rule of writing it down is to keep your hand moving, or your fingers moving, if you're working on a computer. And so I'm going to pass this around. This is something you can kind of keep with you. And it's sorry about the small print. It's called the Rules of Writing Practice. And it starts with, number one is to keep your hand moving, or your fingers. And then it goes on. Number two is to lose control, and so on and so forth. So I find this very helpful to free up that writer's block. And like I said, if you can get something down, think of the letters or journals that have been written by people so long ago that you find so valuable now. The fact that they got it down in writing. or videotape, as the case may be. So that's just on the basics of writing. And today my topic is characterization and plot. And the thing with me is when I write, I think of a person. And I think that's how I organize my family history, is according to a, I started with a specific person. And so in my book, there are seven chapters, and each one is about a set of grandparents, great-grandparents, or great-great-grandparents. And I usually title it after the grandfather, or the male, because there was a lot about the women, I know, but unfortunately, a lot seemed to center around the father's job, career. And so that's why I titled them by the great-grandfather. So how do you talk about a character? Say the character was born in 1800, you never met the guy or woman. All you know is they were born in a certain time period, and yet you want to make this real interesting. You want to make the person come to life. So, what you do? Anybody have any ideas?
Research.
Research.
Research, yeah.
A lot of research.
Time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Time and locality.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Take it. Fake it.
Fake it. A lot of that too. Okay, good points. Research will give you a feel for what was going on at the time, what you mentioned. What was going on at the time? Back in the 1800s, there were a lot of things going on. If your ancestor was in America, there was a civil war going on, there was a pioneer movement, they were coming west, you name it. There were a lot of things going on. So your research, you can find out what was going on in the country and assume your relative was part of that. And then there are local histories for you to get further information. Okay, so, and those are the research type things. But now, let's pretend you're gonna write it down. And how are you gonna to talk about this character and make them come to life? So you know a lot of stuff about them. You've got your genealogy, you've got your research, and now you're going to write it down.
I think dialogue is one
good.
Of the best ways to do it.
That's exactly right. A dialogue is the way that things really come to life, because that's a part of that's how we see each other, basically. And when you think about it, dialogue is something you listen to every day. Writing it down, as you probably have discovered, is not as easy as just listening to it, to make it sound natural. So, along with the dialogue, you can also, since you're writers, you can also portray people's thoughts. And like you said, you might have to make this up. Yeah, right. Yeah, if you're going to get inside somebody's head, you can talk about your own thoughts realistically, but when you talk about another person's thoughts, you're going to have to make them up. Now, I brought an example of, I think it's excellent use of dialogue. It's a book that was out not too long ago, and it was, find it here. It was called Patrimony. And many of you are familiar with this book, it's by Philip Roth. Philip Roth, yeah, familiar with Philip Roth. He wrote a book, Portnoy's Complaint, and Goodbye Columbus. Anyway, it turned out his father, when he was 86 years old, he discovered he had a brain tumor. And so he spent a lot of time with his father during this period. And this is when he's going over to visit his father. His father has just found out he has this brain tumor, and he doesn't have much longer to live. And his wife has died several years before, and he has a girlfriend named Lil. So this is when Philip, the son, is going over to visit his father. He says, "Did you and Lil have a fight?" I asked when I walked in and saw him by himself. "She's never around anyway, so what difference does it make? She runs here, she runs there. When she was sick, I took care of her. I waited on her hand and foot. The hell with her. Let her go. I'm fine. I don't need anyone. It's not my business to butt in, I said, but is this really a good time to start an argument? I don't argue with anyone, he told me. I never argue. If I tell her something, I only tell it to her for her own good. If she doesn't want to listen, the hell with her. Look, put on a sweater and put on your walking shoes, and I'm going to phone Lil, and if she wants to come along, we're all going out for a walk. It's a beautiful day, and you can't sit around inside like this with the shades drawn, and so on. I'm fine inside. I then spoke four words to him, four words that I had never uttered to him before in my entire life. Do as I say, I told him. Put on a sweater and your walking shoes. And they worked. Those four words. I'm 55 and he is almost 87. And the year is 1988. Do as I say, I tell him. And he does it. The end of one era, the dawn of another. While he went to the closet and put on a bright red sweater and his white Adidas, I phoned Lil and asked if she'd like to take a walk with us. Your father's going for a walk, she said. Really? He is. Come, join us. I suggest we go out for a walk, that it'll do him good, and he jumps down my throat. I don't mean to criticize, but that's the truth. You're the only one he listens to. I laughed. And that may not last too long either. I'll be right down, she said. The three of us walked together to the drugstore, three blocks away, past the old apartment buildings and the new condominiums that were going up where the last of Elizabeth's opulent Victorian houses had once stood. It was the same walk on which my mother had overextended herself on the day she died. Lil held him by one arm and I the other, since walking had become very uncertain for him because of his poor vision. Only a few months earlier, he had been patiently waiting for the cataract on his good eye to ripen, so it could be removed. Now, instead of looking forward to the minor surgery that would restore his vision, and with it, he confidently assumed his robust independence, he was contemplating an operation on his head that could kill him. As we walked, he began to reminisce in a very rambling way. My memory is no good anymore, he explained. But that wasn't exactly true. The sequence was often random, and the focus sometimes blurry. But then, the logic of his recollections could always be a little elusive, even at the best of times. He certainly had no difficulty remembering the names of people dead now 20, 30, and 40 years, or where they lived, to whom they were related, and what they had said to him, and he to them on occasions, not necessarily that remarkable. So that is a little bit of a conversation from a
good dialogue.
Really?
Yeah.
Exactly.
What do you think makes a good dialogue then?
It portrays the character.
Mm-hmm.
Short sentences. I mean, not long-winded.
Yeah.
Short.
Yeah, no, not rambling.
Right.
And minimum narrative. It's all dialogue rather than narrative. Explaining what was being done. Mm-hmm. Action is explained in what they're saying.
Not mm-hmm. trying to replicate actual speech, because in actual speech you say, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well. Yeah, you know,
like
that. Yeah, like
so
that.
So just use three dots.
And how about the character? What do you think of this? The son and the father, do you get a kind of a picture? What's this
get
father
picture,
like?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you get the conflict too. Not only the conflict between Lil and father, but
you don't have to spend time describing him.
Yeah.
No, you don't have to spend any time at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get this picture of this guy. He wants to be very independent, and you know, he's not going to be told what to do. And you know,
the intriguing one is Lil. You don't know much about Lil. Is
uh-huh.
his money? Is she? Was she? How, why is she interested in the old man?
You have a suspicious mind.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good point.
It's realistic. Some of us have been there, so you can really relate to what's
mm-hmm.
happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The situation.
Sure, it's much more vivid than a narrative explanation of the characters.
Mm-hmm. And uh-huh. I'm more interested to find out more about Lil.
Yeah.
Hoping
yeah, I want to know about Lil.
Isn't that funny? She had very few lines in this, and yet everyone's carrying that. Well, you have to read the book.
It's more interesting as it goes along. You do find out more about Lil, do you?
Yeah, you find out a lot more about Lil. Apparently, she lives upstairs in one of the apartments, and it's funny because later on, she's coming in to help him out, and he tells her how to open a can of soup. And here he's 80-some years old, and he's telling her how to can of soup. And the wonderful thing about this Philip Roth, I thought, you know, it seemed like a depressing subject. It really, when you think about it, a father facing a serious operation, and yet the humor that is just so wonderful in here. And the morning Bible study was interesting. The fellow that was teaching it said that if you use humor, people remember it too. And that's, you know, you want to walk away from a book and just forget it, you know, but you want to come away thinking, oh, I'll never forget them.
I see you've been shifting your attention to me, but I mean, but I have a tape recording I made with my mother in her older years, and that was 40 years ago. I'd love to listen to that thing.
40 years ago.
I guess I can, if you're talking about dialogue, that would be dialogue right there.
Yeah. Right, exclusively. And
she tells about her things that she went through when Fargo burned, and she had a little millinery store there that went.
Wow. And the other thing is, people talk differently back then. So that's going to be hard if they use different slang or different expressions. And particularly people from the old country used to, you know, have different wordings for things. So what you're saying is tape could be very valuable, so you would be able to use that. The other way you could pick up on that is through letters and journals. And just note the way they talked. To be really truthful, you have to work on that part of it. And because they're not going to talk exactly like we do, that's for sure. No, good point. Okay, so that's dialogue. Now, there's a couple other ways to talk about a character, or make a character come to life. And I think one of them was mentioned. Somebody mentioned, I think it was you, a narrative? Did you? Somebody mentioned the word narrative. You did. Okay. A narrative, does everyone know what that would be?
Just a story.
A story.
Somebody telling you. A description.
Yeah. A story that happened, and it has like a beginning, a middle, and an end. And usually you would be telling it first person, oh, you know what happened to me the other day, and then you go into your story. But if you're writing about an ancestor, you're going to be talking about, this is what happened to Uncle so-and-so, and then follow it through from the beginning to the end. And I have a really good story in here, and I was saying that this is a book about somebody and her mother. She's living with her, the author is living with her mother. Her mother is older, and she's middle-aged, and never married, and she has this incredibly funny life, and I'll just read a short chapter from here illustrating a story, a narrative, and this is something you can use in your family history. It's called Instant Care. Mama wasn't feeling too good. She had a little fever, and she said her bones ached. I talked her into going to her doctor. Dr. Perkins is as old as she is, and he was not in his office. He was sick too. The nurse suggested we go out to the new instant care facility at the shopping center. It's out there between the grocery store and the 10-minute oil change and lube station. You just walk in, and within minutes, a teenage nurse weighs you in, measures you, takes your blood pressure, pricks your finger, gets you into a tissue paper gown, and sets you up on a padded table, still warm from the last wretched soul. Then, a generic doctor bustles in and prescribes medicine, which you pick up at the Quick Drugs across the street. I let Mama out at the curb and pointed her to the entrance to the instant care facility. Then I parked the car and went to do some grocery shopping. When I came out, there she was, standing on the sidewalk, talking to three butchers from the grocery store who were taking a cigarette break. That didn't take long, I said. know, she said, and such very nice young doctors. I was surprised. She hadn't been too keen on instant care when Dr. Perkins' nurse had suggested it. I don't know, I just know it will be all those flashes of light where no light ought to be, and invisible probes nosing into Lord knows where, she complained. But no, she said now, they had been very patient, had listened to her describe her symptoms, and had told her to pick up some Thomas's cold tablets at the old drugstore downtown. Quick Drugs doesn't carry them, Mama said. We went downtown for the medicine, then home. Mama took two of Thomas's cold tablets and went to bed. The next day she was well. I highly recommend the instant care facility, she said. And do you know, I didn't even have to get undressed. Why, I didn't even have to go inside. What, I said. Sidewalk diagnosis, she declared. And free, didn't cost me a dime. And three doctors all at once. Wait a minute, I said. You mean those three men I saw you talking to outside Safeway? You mean those three men smoking Lucky Strike cigarettes in those white coats with blood smeared all around the pockets? Those were your doctors? Yes, she said. Vigorous doctors, the old-fashioned kind. Surgeons, I'd say, from the amount of blood and brains on those white coats.
Oh, dear.
She is.
Oh, that's great.
True story.
That's great.
So,
not this, a good story, anyway.
I was going to say, not only is it true, but I'm sure it has a basis in truth.
Yeah, there's a heck of a lot in it, because all this quick stuff, you know, fast food,
sounds a little,
10-minute
loop. A little fakey to me, but it's a good story.
Well, I forgot to read the subtitle. This is Mama Makes Up Her Mind and Other Dangers of Southern Living. So I don't know. They tell me things are different in the South.
They are.
They are.
I lived in North Carolina for 2 years. Very different.
Uh-huh.
I'm a damn Yankee.
Is it supposed to be all about
Go to University
what?
Of
it's supposed to be all about Alabama.
Yeah,
Albert Hospital.
It is.
And listen to a lecture
it is.
Come in and talk of the War of the Northern Aggression.
Oh, there you go.
That ought to be great.
Ah,
oh,
yes.
My gosh.
She, the author is from Georgia. South Georgia, and she is a regular on National Public Radio. So
what's her name?
Her name is Bailey White.
Oh yeah,
that's a good Southern name, Bailey.
Bailey, yeah.
National Public Radio. That's right. What's this guy
from
Minnesota?
Oh, Garrison.
Garrison Keeler. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good one for stories.
Oh boy,
that's really good.
He's got.
I'm not crazy about him. Yeah,
well,
he makes up stories too. Yeah, he's a good raconteur.
He's a great teller.
Okay, well, the last way to tell about a character is probably the first one that you and I would see when we meet somebody is their physical description, who they are. You first meet somebody, you...
Statistics, huh?
See, you're right. So see, they're 5'9".
Uh-huh.
They have green eyes, or they have white hair, or they're 5'2", and they're, you know, whatever.
Question.
Those are the physical things.
Question.
Yeah.
You're not going to get very many physical characteristics of ancestors that go back 200 years. I mean, all you know, they're either a farmer or a merchant or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't get the physical character.
That's included though. Okay. So anything that would be like he was a farmer.
Then you know he's a big guy.
That's part of their description.
Yeah.
That's the facts. And you know, it's funny because you might hear somebody who was 6'5", and then probably if you met them maybe, you know,
yeah,
there's maybe some exaggeration
yeah.
going on too.
Well, you have to assume, I guess, if he was an active farmer, that he was a burly.
Well, not necessarily, you know.
The merchant of skinny little guy.
Right.
Okay.
Sickly, you know.
If he wore a white coat and had blood on him, he's a doctor.
That's right.
That's cute.
That's right, good one. So, yeah, what they did, and any like thing like their personality, you heard that they were, you know, arrogant and...
But isn't that the last resort? I mean, that's probably, it's the easiest to write, but it's probably the most uninteresting. I think if you can develop a character with
yeah.
the other techniques, you're better off, aren't you? Isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
At least when I read, I prefer, I don't like a lot of description unless it's, mm-hmm. I like that. Shown to me, not told to me.
Sure, a good writer would weave it into a narrative or even in dialogue.
Right.
You have trouble going up those stairs, Grandma, because you put on too much weight.
Yeah.
So you know she's a fatty.
That's good, yeah. So it's sort of a combination. You interweave that stuff. But
you can get some idea of personality.
Mm-hmm.
If they've had a number of lawsuits and that kind of
thing. Yeah.
Early 1800s.
Even back then.
They were suing each other right and left.
Yeah.
The Hatfields and the McCoys.
Fighting over land claims and land deeds and everything. So, I mean, you get some idea.
Sure.
If they've been in court half a dozen or so times, that they're probably a little greedy, cantankerous, avaricious, you know.
Yeah, so...
Well, now they sue the doctors.
In the white suits with the blood on the shirt.
Yeah. So, you want to weave those three things in there, and those are just... But the reason the physical is people, when they write, you want a lot of sensual detail. You know, if you can possibly get it in there. What happened to me is I knew so little sensual details because this is all in the very past. You know, I heard grandfather was very tall, blah, 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 but... in order to get some of the sensual details, you may have to actually revisit the place, and then you can get the feel of the land, say, and smell the wheat or whatever, you know, get some of those details in there. But many writers do visit on spot a place where they're going to write about. I just saw Barbara Kingsolver, who's written a number of very humorous books that are on the bestsellers list, and she said, her latest book is about Seattle, a little bit. I haven't read it, but there's a part about Seattle. And she said she went to Seattle and traveled around the neighborhoods that she was writing about to make sure, you know, everything was correct and to get some of those sensual details, like there's a Safeway across the street, you know, get a feeling for the place.
Well, like Sleepless in Seattle, the movie. Mm-hmm. That's very, very well done because they live on a houseboat and there are people who live on houseboats. Lake Washington.
So. Right. That's an excellent example. This is a writer who's writing about his mother, and he starts off with a photograph, because many of you will have only photographs to go by for physical descriptions. And he starts off, a tintype taken of my mother in her early 20s showed a long oval face with burning brown eyes and hair of the same color. She did not have thick features, and her hands had the sole of a pentagram, which Plato considered the geometric figure of goodness. There was much feeling in the appearance of her mouth, although most of her teeth had been removed by a quack dentist of Rivington Street in New York. Perhaps no more than 4 feet 10 inches in height, health was her beauty. Lucian affirms that, quote, there are some who will be admired for their beauty, whom you must call Adonis and Hyacinthus, though they have a nose a cubic long. Cubic, I guess, is quite long. My mother's long nose sorely vexed me. I don't believe I ever forgave her for that. And when her hair grew perilously thin, showing the vulgar henna dye, I thought I was the unluckiest son in the world. I doted on the short, upturned Gentile nose and imagined myself the singular victim of nature in having a mother with a nose that was a social misfortune. Aside from her unchristian nose, what troubled me enormously was her untidiness. She slopped about the rooms in greasy aprons and dressed more like a rag maker or a chimney sweep. I was ashamed when we walked together in the streets, and when she showed a parcel of her winter drawers as she sat, I suffered discomfiture. So here you have a picture, and he gives you the good and the bad. It's So it's a realistic portrait. A lot of times people will be talking about their mother and father, ancestors, and it will be like they're saints. Right out of heaven, you know, they're, everything about them is wonderful. But I think it's it gives you a more quality piece of writing. If you can say, what was, you know, there's got to be something wrong there, you know. Nobody's perfect. And he's talking about, he admired her health. Her health was her beauty. And so you get a picture of just a very robust woman, and you can see the love he had for her. But then she had this nose, and that made him uncomfortable. And, you know, a little kid, you know, it seems like a realistic portrait that he loved his mother, but there were things that made him uncomfortable. And I think a lot of people that had, you know, parents maybe coming from the old country or whatever, there were things that they thought they were better at, you know, being the kids and being more Americanized and, you know, in these old country ways. So I think that's a very excellent description using a photograph, and of course he had a lot to go on because his mother didn't die till much later in his life. So he gives her height, but he's made it interesting too by adding some literary details, which you can do as writers. You're writing, you're in charge. If something comes to your mind, like, oh, this reminds me of something from Greek, you know, he knew this Greek quotation about beauty, or could be some other quotation from a poem you like, or, but you can insert things like that from literary history. They say every writer is resting on the shoulders of the writers that came before them. So, you know, all that is free game. You look up quotes or something comes to mind. So that's pretty much for the characterization. I was going to talk about plot today, but I see the time is getting very limited. So I'd like to hear what you think at this point. Any questions or ideas?
Mostly, I kind of want to go back maybe a generation or two earlier than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think that's going to be more, you know, I can fill them, the kids in on some of the other stuff rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I think the interesting thing is going to be for them to see maybe why I am the way I am and the
mm-hmm.
way they, why they are the way they are to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking of a small thing, you know, and we all just went, when we were kids, a big thing was sheet music. You know, there's no sheet music now at all unless you're
mm-hmm.
an instrument, unless you play an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big thing in my life. And that's something mm-hmm. they don't have any feel for at all.
Yeah, I've heard that they don't even sell it anymore. You go and get a computer printout or something.
I don't know. I've never even
it's
heard
kind
of
that.
Yeah, if you want to.
Kind
of. Well, they
strange.
Have like books. You know, you can get some of the old songs out of books.
Uh-huh.
And another thing when you were a child, well, at least when I was a child, the player pianos, where you had the rolls,
mm-hmm.
and we used to play those all the time. The automatic, you know.
We have a brand new state-of-the-art organ in our church, and they're feeling terribly proud of themselves because they can get cassettes, discs that you can, computer discs that you can put in and play any song you want. And I said, yeah, but that sounds like a player piano to me. It's supposed to be the state-of-the-art now that they're going back to
I think
build.
Another thing that that I think about is, I don't know if it's gone now, but many families, every kid in the family played an instrument. Once in a while, it sounds horrible, but you get together and play. And one was a violin, one was a trumpet, one was a cornet, and one was Garrett played a cello, and things like that.
Now they all play drums.
Somebody had a piano. Pardon?
Now they all play drums.
No, they've got MTV.
Drums, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say TV, I think, could
yeah.
play some
TV. That's all they need now.
Uh-huh.
We did that with
or
their own kids, and they get together and play and
mm-hmm.
do it themselves. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
One of our children does that. We did that at Christmas. It was entertaining. But you're right, it doesn't happen very often.
I don't hear about it anymore.
They just brought their instruments, they each had something. It was fun.
Hmm.
Because we made our own music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it didn't have all the interference of tapes and TV and...
Well, it's more participation involved in that. Now we just listen and...
Those spectators.
Spectators, right. It's a whole different, I think that's changed, and it's not good. I think participation, it made you feel...
Well, the same thing is true in sports. You've got 105,000 people in the stands to watch 22 players. It's all spectators.
Yeah, good point.
Is on professionalism rather than...
Yeah, right. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, it's so hard to write, is you feel like you're competing against, you know, all the number one bestsellers. And I think you should do it for its own sake and, you know, not be intimidated by, because, you know, a lot of things need to be written and get things down to a level where, you know, everyone's involved.
Yeah, we are a generation, though, of perfection, because instead of telling a story, we videotape it instead of... I noticed the youngsters that we have, when they have school dances and so on, they don't want a live band, because in their minds, they've got, this is a song that is performed by a certain person, and that's the only way that song can be performed, so therefore you have to have a tape recorded by that person. I think we have a whole generation of feeling that there's no room for improvisation, there's no room for something else that might not be perfect.
And that's just the reverse of what it was, where if you couldn't afford a band, then you had to go to records.
When you had a dance, because you couldn't afford to hire somebody to come in and play at the dance, you had to have recorded music, and that was a step down. Now it's the opposite.
Yeah, just the opposite. Yeah. And it sounds like there's a lot of unemployed musicians out there because of this.
Yeah, sure. I think TV is spoiling all of our kids and ourselves too, because that's passive entertainment.
It's perfection. It's perfection.
I think the two points.
It used to have, in the early days, every small town had a band.
You had
the town square, and they played every Saturday night with band. You had little town orchestras. You had plays and playhouses. And now the arts are going...
We used to have Saturday night amateur hours.
Even the big orchestras in the big cities are suffering financially, and a lot of them are going under. And plays outside of New York and Boston and a few places like that, you don't have them in small towns at all.
Well, smaller towns, pass those around. Where I'm from, which is about not quite 100,000 people, they've got a community band, which is one of the most popular things, and now people have a chance to use their training and music.
I think one of our problems is we really don't know what's out there in terms of what the youth are doing. Because I think a lot of the things you say that don't exist do exist. Kids are getting together all the time with instruments my kids, and they're not kids anymore, when they go, there are all kinds of places they go where there's comedy, stand-up comedy, and Western dancing, you know, you don't do that to records, you do that to bands.
Well, speaking of old times, acquainted with the magazine called Reminisce?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It comes out of
the... And that one's called the old days.
Well, there's another called
Reminisce. That's the best one.
Country. And Reminisce is just what its title says. And you were talking about, you don't know what things were like, your grandchildren don't know what the wind-up photograph was. Well, in Reminisce, you know, you get pictures like that, so at least they can see what they look like. They don't, because they can't envision it. And that's what Reminisce does. It's purely a pictorial, the magazine, and there are no ads, which I miss, frankly, but...
Did you get this that came in later? Did you get the rules?
Oh,
you all got that?
Well, you have it.
Okay.
Get one to her.
Oh, okay.
I've been doing some, weddings about taking members of my own family, for instance, we have a large family. And it's surprising how much I could write about them, you know. That's one way, but I think also, but instead of experiences family-wise, I haven't even started something like that. But the individual thing I like to read, you know. We haven't done anything. My wife and I visited our ancestral places in Norway.
Oh, really?
Years ago. Oh, boy, I didn't learn a lot then.
Okay, well, the time's up for today, but I'm going to be doing this again tomorrow. I'll let me see what time. Like 11:40. So, if you're available. And did you write something?
Nope.
So, and if you get a chance to write anything tonight, or, you know, when you come back, be sure and be great to share these things.
Something about what?
Oh, I guess I didn't give you that. It's
Elder Gospel program gets kind of screwed up.
Yeah, I know.
It's hard to get into all of these.
Yeah, I know. Anyway.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome. This is some ideas when you have it to write on your family. These are...